All right, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of Otsy Fotsy Immigrants. We're here with one of my favourite new people. She's a great lady, a nice songwriter from Australia. Kobe Grant. All right, Kobe, it's really nice to have you on the show. I really appreciate you finding the time.
Hey, no worries at all. It's a pleasure to chat to you, as always.
Something that we always hear a lot on podcasts is this standard way of introducing the guest. And it's something that we've also done the last couple of times, which was go into this explanation of backstory and talents and stuff in sort of a really straightforward way. So we wanted to start this episode off with a little game.
Okay.
This one's called Good Cop, Bad Cop, and I will play the role of the good cop, and Mo, our producer, will play the role of the bad cop. Are you ready to begin?
Okay. I am ready.
Okay, Mo.
All right, Mrs. Grander, if that's your real name. It says here on my notes that you started playing music at 16 years old. So I watch you on The Voice of Germany, and I can definitely tell you, you don't look like 16 years old.
Wow.
We're not holding anything there back here at the studio today.
No. I see that. Yes, I'm not 16 years old, in fact. I'm 33 years old. But
you started at 16,
see what you were
right?
doing there, Mo. I did. I actually started playing the piano when I was 6 years old.
6 years old, you started with piano?
Yeah, and then I played that for about 10 years. No, not quite. 9 years. And then it was classical piano, and I actually just wanted to sing, and I wanted to accompany myself. And I was like, well, I can't really carry the baby grand around. So I picked up a guitar and just taught myself a few chords. And then at school I took a music lesson from the guitar teacher, music lessons. And he always I kind of regret not learning the guitar properly as one would say. I just went in there and I was like, this week I want to learn this Jewel song. Just teach me the chords. This week I want to learn this Alanis Morissette song. I want to learn this Joni Mitchell song. Like, you know, I had no interest in learning how to play the guitar properly. I just wanted to sing and not have to rely on someone else to accompany me. So yeah, I started pretty early. Apparently I was singing before I was speaking as well.
We totally have that properly trained thing in common. I really wish that when I was younger, I would have taken proper guitar lessons and stuff. I remember I was playing music with a friend of mine last year or the year before, and I was showing him the chords that I had written down so that he could play some little riffs on top. And he kept squinting and like turning his head and looking over at the neck, and he was like, what are you playing? Like, what the fuck is that? And I would just say it was something simple like an E major or A minor or something, but the finger positioning is not correct. You know, it just was comfortable for me.
Right.
And I wish I had learned a little bit more theory and stuff when I started.
Same. Whenever I'm playing with other musicians and they're like, oh yeah, if you could just send me the keys of the song, I was like, I absolutely cannot do that, but I can send you a recording of me playing that song, but I don't know what key it's in.
That kind of reminds me of like, you know, the old stories from like Lee Von Helm from the band when he talks about when they played with Joni Mitchell in the last waltz, and he's like, you know, she just came into the rehearsal space with us and she didn't know which fucking chord was what. She didn't know where to start. She didn't know what key it was in. It was so much work for us. And I was like, that would be me, man.
But to be fair, like a lot of the musos that I know, the session musos.
Musos?
No, musicians. Oh. Sorry. Maybe that's an Australian word for musos.
I like that.
A lot of the musicians that I know that did like study and you know, go to university or do a degree in whatever, jazz or classical or whatever, they also do say to me that the other side of that is sometimes they feel quite restricted because they know better or they know what's right as such or, you know, correct. So then they're not so free in their artistry.
Okay.
Somehow they feel that maybe, you know, there's pros and cons to both. I know that's not everyone. That's a generalization, obviously. But
makes sense.
That is what I've heard from the musicians who, you know, were a little bit more strict with their learning style.
It's crazy. This thought came into my head just now, and I just remembered that I said this exact phrase on the last episode, but it really comes down to feeling like the grass is always greener. You know, like we both wish we had more training and more theory and understanding, but on the other side, you have these musicians saying, well, I wish I had more of like a free flowing, just gut instinct about some things and not just thinking about the math of it all.
Exactly. Knowing. Yeah, it's true. But there's pros and cons to both.
Exactly. Okay. So we have a bad cop question done. I'm going to be the good cop now.
Okay. Okay, great.
So Miss Grant, I'm with the understanding that at some point you moved from Perth to Melbourne, and I'm just curious when that was and why you felt the need to do that.
That was when I was 19 years old, and the main reason was I entered into this this online competition. It was called the Starburst Star of the Future or some shit like that.
The glowing bright Starburst future of Sunny Child's grassy hole. I don't know.
God, it was so cheesy, but basically there was, you know, you had to pay to enter, and then you were performing at this beautiful old theater in Melbourne. There was an audience there. There was some industry people there, radio. So either you got votes from your fans or the judges picked you. So I was a judge's choice to go over to Melbourne to perform in this, you know, and if you won, you got some recording time. Anyway, I didn't win, but I went along, and that was really cool. And I was Melbourne is sick. It's kind of the Australia's music capital.
Is that right? Okay, because I'm always curious, you know, which places spawn the most creativity between Melbourne or Sydney maybe?
It's definitely Melbourne. So okay. I also thought about moving to Sydney as someone from Perth, which is not the music capital. it's just really hard in Perth. In general in Australia is, you know, a bit tougher than I've found over here, but that's something for probably later. But, you know, in Perth, it's just a really kind of quiet, big country town as such. And so I went over to Melbourne. I was wow, there's music everywhere on every corner. There's musicians everywhere. I met a couple of people through that competition that I did, locally based musicians. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to come back. I mean, that was when I was 18. I was I'm just going to pack up and come back. And I, you know, made a couple of contacts. I really came to Melbourne at 19, knowing two people vaguely, not even really knowing them, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm gonna do this because I think it's the best shot for music. So sometimes I look back at myself, my young self, I'm wow, that's pretty ballsy, you know?
Yeah,
that
is impressive, yeah.
I meet 9 to 18. Yeah, go on, sorry.
No. But you went there for that competition. Did you bring your bags and your gear and stuff with you saying, I'm going to go to this competition and then I'm going to stay there? Or did you enjoy the visit, go back home and then try to go back?
I that's what I did. I enjoyed the visit. I kind of was this is really cool. There's a lot of great stuff going on. I met some cool people. And then I went back to Perth, packed up my bags, quit uni and moved.
Oh, you dropped out of school. Oh, I didn't know that.
I did drop out of school.
Wow. Well, that's also really ballsy. I think sometimes people really don't have to stay in school as much as people think you might have to.
No, I think if I, you know, I was planning on being a doctor.
Really?
Only because I had the grades to do that. Not really because I was super passionate about it, just because I liked science, basically. Right. But in fact, in those first few months when we were working with the cadavers, the dead bodies, I was so grossed out that I was there is literally no way that I could be a doctor. just made my stomach turn.
Were you there for dissecting the corpses?
Actually, at that stage, we weren't dissecting anything. Most of the corpses were already dissected, and we're looking and touching veins and muscles and seeing how everything connects and looking at the dissected parts and, you know, analyzing them and trying to understand them. Yeah, it was pretty foul.
Oh, my God.
There were some people that were just that's what you do when you're studying medicine, you know.
Yeah.
Some people that were totally fine with it. And just me personally, there were some people that were couldn't handle it at all. And I was just this is gross. Like, I'm not into this. And then imagine if it was like real. I was like, okay, I think I like the idea of, like, because I think that the human body is amazing, like what it can do. And I loved, mm-hmm. that's what I loved. And that's why I was doing it. But it wasn't really, like, you know, my passion as such. Your music was. So I just sort of was like, nah, I'm going to stop this and I'm going to fly over to Melbourne and see what I can do with music.
You know, having a history of like running your hand along the graying, decaying cadavers, it seems like a foundation for a metal band, actually. I'm surprised that you went folk.
I know. It's kind of gross. Not everyone does that in their life. But, oh, mate, I will never forget it. Like, you know, it was so many years ago now and I still can't get it out.
I'm sure it still haunts your nightmares. It's going to haunt mine. So you can pass the load over to me. okay. So you went to Melbourne at 19 and then you were there for what year was that when you moved there? Do you know?
I guess that was 2005, I want to say. Hold on. I graduated. I think it was 2005 I moved to Melbourne.
Okay. Yeah. So you were there.
That's right.
You were there for about seven more years before you moved. Okay. So that leads us to Mr. Bad Cop once again.
Yeah, enough of your little music business done in Australia. You moved to Germany in 2012, Mrs. Grand. What a coincidence. Mm-hmm. We all know Australia would have been the first island to go down at the world's end. Was that the main reason to moving over?
You know how long it took us to think of that joke?
Oh, my
sad,
God.
It's like a sad amount of time to think of, okay, how can we like combine the Mayan calendar with her moving to Germany?
So good. How many world's ends has there been predicted world's ends? Quite a few, I think. I'm always still kind of waiting for that world's end to come. I sort of feel quite comfy in the knowledge that I've enjoyed my life. So if the world does end, I'll bring it on.
I think about that too sometimes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, I think that could be just the, I have a bit of an obsession with like post-apocalyptic movies, TV series.
You know, just a small anecdote. I was just thinking about this. Okay. There's three, like apocalyptic, like end of the world movies on the top of my head. And I wanted to ask you if you've probably seen them, which one is your favorite? What's the one called? There's the only one title that I'm forgetting. There's one with Elijah Wood and Robert Duvall where the asteroid hits Earth and the waters, the oceans overflow and they have to, Elijah Wood goes back for his girlfriend. And
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, I can't believe I forgot the name of that one. Okay, well, then we'll just choose between Armageddon and 2012. The John Cusack version.
Okay. I actually wouldn't have put either of those as my top one, but if I had to choose between those, I'd say Armageddon.
I would have also. Yeah, it's a little bit more entertaining. Which one would you say was your favorite?
Was it Deep Impact? No, it wasn't.
Deep Impact.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a nice feeling.
Deep Impact. The comment. So
I would have chosen Deep Impact as like my number one of those three. I love Elijah Wood.
Okay. But all of those ones, well, that like it's kind of about what's going to happen or what could happen. But I like the ones where the shit has already gone down,
You know,
and now it's like after. So I'm into like I Am Legend or like what about, or, you know, I'm into like what was that one where there was this disease that like wiped out like half of the entire population.
Like 28 Days Later? Oh, with Matt.
Yes. That wasn't 28 Days Later was another one, but it was Contagion.
Oh, like, Contagion.
Where there's a disease. Yeah, there's like a disease that like just wipes everyone out, you know, or something like that. Or what about that kind of one where no one could have babies anymore? Like the world had gone sterile.
Children of Men.
Children of Men, yes.
Yeah. That's the shit.
That's all right up my alley, and I have a real... I don't know how we got onto post-apocalyptic stuff.
I mean, to be fair...
Oh, okay, the world's end, Australia.
Yeah, with your history with dead bodies, I'm not surprised that you like zombie movies. You know,
yeah, that's true, yeah. I'm right into it.
Well, we got on that topic because we were talking about the fact that you moved to Germany in 2012, so I'm just curious what brought you there and, you know, how was that process for you?
Well... Good question. So not really, it's not a short answer, but that's okay. So basically the reason, when I first moved over to Melbourne, about a year later, I signed with a publishing label. And that publishing label, Gaga Publishing, they I mean, they have basically single-handedly funded my original music career because I've made money with placements of my songs in TV commercials, also writing for TV and film. So that has been amazing. And one of the first placements they got me was in a TV spot in Scandinavia. And the song was translated into the 5 different languages. It was playing there on the radio. It was, so it was on TV basically. And I thought, you know what? This is a good reason to maybe go over that side of the world and play some gigs because it's, you know, kind of a good in. And at that time, like, you know, I was self-managed. And a lot of my music career has been kind of self-managed and organized and booked. And at that time, I was definitely self-booked. So I sent out quite a few emails booking myself a bunch of gigs. And I pretended I was someone else.
Really?
I always like,
oh, I love that.
Yeah.
What was your manager? What was your fake manager name?
I actually cannot remember now. I'd have to go back and have a look, but like it was something like, I don't know, like Tom Smith. I don't know. Like it was just the most basic, like you know, Jane Doe kind of thing.
Oh my God.
Cody West.
Cody West, yeah.
Because I sent it from I had an email like info@kobegrant.com. So it was like, you know, from my like website email. So I was like, I'm such and such and I represent Kobe Grant. And she's just like got, you know, this song in these TV commercials and we're coming over for a bit of a promo tour. Like, honestly, I talked so much shit. I went into like,
that's amazing.
You know, Universal offices and yeah, I was a bit of a go-getter back then.
Absolutely.
And so, I came over and I thought, you know, I'm also going to do some shows in other parts of the world. So that was actually 2011, not 2012.
Oh, sorry. Okay. 2011.
Yeah, no, that's fine because that was my first trip over that was not, I wasn't moving. Like 2012 was when I was like, okay, I'm going to Germany and I'm staying for a while. So 2011 was when I played these shows in Scandinavia. I booked a bunch also in like the UK, also a couple in Ireland, and then in Germany. And I just loved the shows in Germany the most. I found that the audiences were the best. They were the most open to like original music that they'd never heard before.
Yes.
And that was kind of the driving force of me being like, I'm going to go back over there because it's so much better than, because at this stage I'd been in Melbourne for however long, not, you know, still independent. And man, it was just a hard scene. Like, you could get to like without being on radio, you know, you got to this point where it was like you were playing at the venues that could hold like 300-400 or whatever. And even if you were selling them out, you were making no money, like with all the promo that you had to do. Like, right. I don't know what it was like in other places, but you were paying like quite a few $100 to get like posters around town an ad in the music rag, like in the music magazine.
Yeah, it's ridiculous what kind of threshold you have to cross to be able to actually make money, past the overhead.
It's
unbelievable.
Like a break-even situation where people were like, oh, wow, you're doing real good. Like you sold out the Northcote Social Club. I'm like, yeah. And I, you know,
I made 10 euros. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a crazy business that way. I was just before I forget the question, like with this tour that you self-booked, were you able to self-fund it from the money you made from the publishing, from the licensing?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So that was a song that I had 100% written. So it was total, like, and that's what I have done. I've been so lucky with Gaga. Like there's been other times I was signed also to Sony Publishing, but Gaga has, over the years placed my songs. And every time I get kind of a bulk amount, it means I can record another album or go on another tour or, you know, whatnot. And now it's in a bit better place with touring and making money. But like before it was like, that was the thing that kind of allowed me to not have to get a job. I moved to Europe, like when I was living in Melbourne, man, I did everything from like dog walking to, I was a magician's assistant. I was cleaning houses. Like,
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious when you were self-managing, were you also like what royalty collection agencies were you working with in Australia? Or were you always with, because I, you know, I only know the two main American ones like BMI and ASCAP. And of course now I know GAMA.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
So, but was that also bringing any income for you from sync licensing or was it mostly from the bulk income from Gaga?
Oh, it was the bulk income from Gaga. It was a little bit from, it's called APRA, APRA AMCOS is what it's called. And it's basically, you know, like the one in America. I can't remember the name of it, but or Gamer. So yeah, but the most of it was definitely coming from publishing. And I just kind of lucked out because the thing is with publishing deals, and I found that when I had a major publishing deal, if you have like a hero, like, you know, you call that person that signed you your hero. And if you've got a hero there, they know your music, they love your music. So when they get a brief or whatever, they think immediately of you. If you lose your hero, if your hero leaves the company, it's hard. Like, I think that's the same also with signing a major record deal as well. Like, it gets hard then to like get anything moving, to get your stuff released. you know, and you've signed away your rights. Like,
it's a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit of a nightmare. So my hero was the guy who started the company, Grant, his name is. And Grant had started that company and he'd come from a major label and just seen how they rorted the independent musicians, like how much major labels took, like, you know, and how much these artists weren't getting. And he was like, I kind of wanted to find a way to, you know, take independent musos, the ones, musicians, the ones who have like worked really hard. I keep saying musos.
No, I love Australian. It. No, it's okay. Now you can say it. Now you've explained it. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So they like, you know, he wanted to kind of reward the independent musicians, knowing, coming from a place where he knew like how hard that was. And so Grant is, you know, still like working there, not as much because he's, you know, stepped down a bit, but like,
right.
You know, I was there from the beginning and I just feel like that's like was one of these things that, you know, helped me to continue in my music career was having, you know, him as my hero. So
he sounds like an actual hero, you know.
He is a hero.
When you meet these people who step down from these higher seats and like bigger corporations and they get disgusted with how things are ran and they decide to run things independently.
Yeah.
That support the artists more, you know, you really have to admire that sort of thing. And it's so nice to see that, you know, sometimes there's less money in it or less investment or whatever. But when you have that, when you have that care and you have that attention to your music that you've been kind of fighting for, it goes a long way.
Yeah. And he just loved and loves music so much. So yeah, we talk a lot. Every time I go back to Melbourne, I catch up with Grant and, I just feel really lucky at that young age to have found someone who actually cares. Because, you know, at that time also, and you know more than anyone, like it just goes on and on, there's so many shit talkers, like so many people who are like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Like, man, when I think about the first EP that I recorded was with this producer called Jamie X. And
Jamie X. Sexy Jamie.
Jamie X. And he thought that he was the fucking shit. Anyway, he like did 4 songs for me or whatever. And he sent them to me. He'd already got them mastered before I had approved the mix.
What?
And in one of the songs, you could still hear the click track. And I was like, dude, I was like, I was 19. So I was like, hey, I don't really like, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but like, I don't think it should. And he tried to spin some shit like, oh, nah, like Alanis Morissette has the click track in some of her tracks. So I was like, that's fucking bullshit. Like,
no, man.
No way she does. So
I've had
these kind of experience, but like which young musician hasn't, like, you know, or things that you think are going to go somewhere or people that make promises or whatever it is. So I feel so lucky to have met a genuine person in Grant and Gaga Publishing and signed with them and stayed with them, you know.
So, seriously, in the music and the film industry, finding those good hearted people that just mean well and care about the art is literally like finding a needle in a haystack.
I know it is.
It's unbelievable, right? I mean, it's just like you just said, and from my experience, it's a lot of like kind of sifting through social media bullshit and how people just set up this profile of what they want you to think they're doing. And then you kind of find out later that it's all this intimidation and competition and like self-interest. And when you finally find like a good musician or a good manager or label or partner or agent or something that really cares about it and wants to like support what you're doing because they believe in it, it's this unbelievable sense of relief.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, so you're honest. You're an honest person. Yeah. That's finally, you know.
I know. So yeah, that was really awesome. And yeah, there's many stories. Like, I had a dodgy manager and I'd like, you know, and what it's like, people threatening to sue you and this, that and the other. And it's just like, oh my God, I just want to make music. Like, can all these other dudes just fuck off, you know?
Yeah. So, I think if someone were to say like, what's the two you know, what's the two most difficult questions about being a musician, I would say, like, why are so many people mean and why is it so expensive to play shows?
Yeah, I know.
Like, why is it so expensive to make music? It's such a backwards industry.
I know it is. But then, like, the reason, like, you do it is not to make money. Like, you know, you don't, not many people I know go into it being like, I'm going to do this because I want to make money.
No, like, I think, you have to be a totally differently minded musician to like, to be wanting to do it for that sort of thing. And it's not even it's not even a good or bad. It's just a different, it's like playing the trumpet or playing the guitar. Like one person just really wants it to be a different way.
Yeah. True. You know what I mean? So
when you were on tour in Europe and then you came across the shows in Germany and so why, you know, why Berlin specifically? Or is there, maybe it's not an easy answer.
Berlin is like, at the moment I live in Berlin, but that was never, when I came back to Germany the following year, I was very much a nomad. I basically lived out of my suitcase for quite a few years, you know.
Really?
Like 3 months here, like, you know, sublet there, or like 5 months there, or I lived 6 months in Amsterdam, like back when I signed to Sony Publishing, or like I really was like this nomad. And still now, like I live in Berlin, but man, I'm gone like half the time.
Yeah.
Like sometimes more, you know, I've just been gone the last 3 weeks. I'm only
whenever I call you, you're always driving at ridiculous hours. And
I know. I know. So
your schedule seems crazy.
So it's like I say, like, yeah, I live in Germany, but like I have an official address and then it's like I'm all over the place. You know, I have like my official address is actually in another part of Germany as well because I've got friends there, like, you know, and I lived there for a time. Like, but honestly, I'm just really because I'm a musician who's on the road so much. I never feel like anything. I always feel like transient as such.
Yeah,
it's a topic I talk about in a lot of my songs, like this not really feeling home, like somewhere is home, you know,
mm-hmm.
like even I, you know, it's nice to come back to the place where I sleep most, but like,
yeah,
you know, I still feel like not really have this feeling of being settled. And in a way, like that's not a great thing. That's a con, I think. It's definitely.
I was just about to ask. I mean, do you think you're one of those people that sometimes feels more comfortable in transit, in the flow of things?
Do you know, it's such an interesting thing because there was a couple of years that I sort of, you know, went back to Melbourne and spent a bit more time there where I just sort of had enough, you know?
Yeah.
Because all this time and all these years, not the last year, in fact, I've been just in Germany, but I've kind of like, oh, I'll go back home for summer for 2 months, you know, 3 months, because why would I stay in the winter? Like, you know, and sort of have this feeling of, but where is that? Where is my home? You know, because it's been like almost my entire, even that I moved from Perth to Melbourne, like, and I lived in Melbourne, I still felt like that was not anything long term. And I know I have a small commitment problem because even like signing a lease for a year, I'm like, this is a big deal. Like, you know?
Yeah.
But I like to have my life in a way that like literally if I needed to, if an opportunity came up in another country or something happened, I would need 2 days to pack and I'd be out of here. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. I talk about that a lot with you know, with friends and family and stuff about, I love having like a home base, but I think there's something, and I know that you feel the same way. There's just like this unspoken, like, I don't know if this is the right word, but like this inherent urge to be playing on the road and to be out. And maybe eventually after some months that becomes draining and you get like lost and you get exhausted and you're so happy to come home. But I feel like I need that balance. If I'm home too long, I get road sick. And if I'm gone too long, I get homesick.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And how many songs have been written about that? You know, like that's what it is. It's like this person who like a traveler, like, you know, that we just, We're travelers. Like, it's like we always have to be, I don't know, somehow like, you know, Rolling Stones just, you know, playing. And I don't know if that is an inherent thing, I think. And I don't know where that was ingrained into me. I did a lot of travel when I was a child with my parents. So, you know, whether I kind of got a taste for it then or not, but like, it's, or is it like this weird thing where like somehow as a musician, you always have to have this struggle, and without the struggle, you can't write or something? Like, I don't know. It's the same kind of question over love and heartache and, you know, can we ever really commit? Because if we are happy, then what do we write songs about? You
know? Like, yes. Oh, I really know that feeling. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I've been happy a couple of times and written a couple of like, you know, real cheesy love songs, but for sure the ones that hit the hardest are the lonely ones. Like,
absolutely. I mean, everybody has an uptown girl, but you know, that there's a, there's much deeper songs out there.
There is. And most of them come from this, you know, this feeling. So yeah,
Go ahead.
Just that I came back to Germany and just started living this, like, you know, from 2012, kind of this gypsy life out of my suitcase. And just, and in this time, like in these years, the amount of people that have opened up their homes and hearts and just let me like crash for a little while, or, you know, between shows, just finding somewhere short term to stay. And yeah, it's been a really interesting journey that I feel quite exhausted from sometimes.
I can totally imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to, I have some things I'd like to get into, about your, of course, your stint on television and, you know, your songwriting style and, you know, your viral Winter Bear and the new album and everything. But first, just because this is, part of the reason that we do this podcast is, of course, to get into the creative part of the people that we're lucky enough to interview. But also there's this other aspect of the fact that, you know, you are an immigrant, you're living in another country with different policies, different culture, different language. So what I'd like to dip into first is, how was it for you with immigration coming from Australia as opposed to maybe me from the States? Or how was it with learning the language and making friends and stuff? You know, that's really difficult.
Isn't that such an interesting thing? Like, I feel like I could talk to you for 10 hours, not like 45 minutes.
You're welcome to. I don't have to edit this, so you can talk to me as long as you want.
So it's like, I think for me, the easiest way was this two-year UK visa, actually, because we have the Commonwealth agreement. So
I
had this two-year visa for the UK, which was a working holiday visa. That was the first thing I got from 2012. Then I went over to do this artist visa in Germany. At this time, I had met that first trip in 2011 that I came. I actually performed at a small venue and met the booking agency there, the guy who just booked that small stage in Würzburg. And he became a great friend. And he is now like doing like my management and bookings outside of my main booking agency, like all my private stuff. He's like the best kind of personal assistant, friend, manager, everything.
Are we allowed to, would you be comfortable using at least his first name? Because I would like to ask
him. Max.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about him too much, but I'm curious how you met Max, because I supported you at a show last March, or maybe. And he was such a nice, friendly, professional guy. And I thought, man, what a lucky interaction. And I was curious how you guys met.
Also, so he booked, so Max is also a bit of a creative guy. Like, he also has his whole life had what we would call normal jobs as such, with this create, like, you know, one foot in a creative side, like he's done, you know, comedy and whatnot. So he was booking, like, you know, he's really into culture wherever he lives. So he was booking this stage and we became friends. And also he introduced me to like some other people in the area, and he helped me with my German visa, because as you know, like if you don't speak the language, it is really difficult to sort it out. Yeah. And to know like the ins and outs, my God, there's so many rules and like these tiny things that you need. And Max had also previously worked in customs as well. So he was like this guy that knew all about the rules of, you know, everything. And so he helped me with my visa. And it's interesting because I've had more than one musician, like, from Ausland, like more than one person who's not from Germany ask me about that. Actually, Max is thinking about making that a branch of his business as well.
I think he should. He seems very good at it.
That's what I said to him. I was like, because he's the most, like, personable, like, he's the dude that you want on your team. And you know, and so he became a friend, but he also helped me with my visa process, which after like you can renew it a certain amount of times. And once you get to like the 5 year mark mm-hmm. of, you know, having your visa, if you then, so now I have what's called, you know, I guess it's like, it's sort of like a permanent residency. That's what we call it back home anyway, mm-hmm. but it's not that, it's just like a unlimited, visa, I guess, like unbefristet Aufenthalt Erlaubnis. So I'm allowed to, and okay. that's an EU one too. So,
wow, that's great.
Yeah. And so to get that, I had to do this like citizenship test. I had to do, yeah, because I don't know your story either. It's different coming from America, I suppose. I had to learn the language. I had to pass an exam for B1, level B1, which yeah. is kind of just intermediate level German.
Mm-hmm. What you know, state of Germany did you do all this in?
I did this in Berlin. I was, I could okay. go to, you know, I am a person who leaves everything to the last minute. Like if I have something to do, I leave it all to the last minute. So I literally had 3 months before this exam, this opportunity to do this exam to get my visa in time. And I spoke like no German, like, you know, hello, goodbye, how much does this cost, you know?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so if I was that, like, righto, yeah. you've got like 3 months to learn to get to level B1 German. So I went to, I just chose somewhere and I had a friend that was living here at the time and, you know, I just went to a proper German school where they didn't even speak English, you know, every day for 3 months, Monday to Friday.
Oh my God.
I had a private tutor once or twice a week. I only listened to German radio, only watched German shows. And in the end, like I did really well. So I was like, okay, it is possible to learn another language super quick.
I admire that. I admire that self-discipline. I really do.
Yeah. Well, when it's like, that's the, my self-discipline, I actually don't have it. That's why I leave it till the last minute. You know, it's like, I have no discipline. I couldn't learn it over a year. I was just like, okay, only when the pressure's on. So yeah, I had help, you know, I was again, lucky enough to meet a really great person, genuine, mm-hmm. great person early on who was just wanted to help me. Yeah. And now that's kind of gone full circle where Max, like now that after I've done The Voice and, you know, the gigs are bigger, there's more money. He can actually earn money from, you know, doing stuff.
You can kind of give a little bit back to him.
Absolutely, because yeah, before he was a friend who just helped me out every now and then, and sometimes he would book a gig or whatnot, but like nothing, you know, nothing because I was just like a small fry. I mean, I am still a small fry, but you know what I mean. Like,
I'd say you're bigger fries now. I'd say you're like you're a meal of fries.
Yeah, okay. It's good. My fries have gone up a bit, but
yeah, like, you're expensive. You're expensive fries.
So, yeah, I got my visa, which was cool. Making friends, this is another interesting thing because I think, like, it gets lonely, you know, and when you have, like, yeah. most of your people that know you to the core and they're in another country, it's hard. Yeah. As an adult, like, anyway, making new friends is hard because a lot of the time, like, adults already have their core group and we don't have a lot of time, you know, as we get older, like as I get older, something that's the most precious commodity is my time.
Right.
So it's pretty rare that I meet someone that like affects me enough that I'm like, I want to hang out with this person again, you know?
Yeah.
And I think being musicians, we're definitely more open. And when you come to a new city, you're more open. And the best way, like I've always thought music is like the, you know, key to, you know, being social because musicians are just generally more open people. People who come to watch music are more open. Mm-hmm. You know, so I didn't find it hard and I've never found it hard to make friends. But if we're talking about like real friends, you know, like friends that are people that you're going to, you know, invite to your wedding or have at your funeral, like there's only a few. Like I've made a lot of acquaintance friends and like, you know, really, really met a lot of great people. But I was still able, it's just the same as at home, you know, you meet someone, you like them, you nurture the relationship. So I've got actually a couple of great mates here in Berlin. One is German and one is Australian. And my other kind of core group of friends actually live in Amsterdam. Again, one was Australian and kind of introduced me to the others. So I feel really lucky that I've got some people on this side of the world that if I like, you know, because sometimes it gets like, lonely, you know, people that you can call and say, I just, you know, I need to talk to someone who knows me and yeah. knows how I feel and that I don't have to be, Kobe Grant, the performer.
Exactly.
You know,
you can kind of shed the persona and be yourself. And that's really,
yeah,
it's necessary yeah. to do that.
It is. And I think, like, you know, humans in general, we really need that social aspect. And if we don't have it, it's not good for your mental health, you know. And, like, I am amazed at how I've maintained my friendships back home. Still, like, I mean, I left my hometown when I was 19 and I've still got 4 or 5 girlfriends that I have regular contact with. Which I think is amazing. But, like, our relationship has been a long distance relationship, basically, you know. And the same in Melbourne. I've got 4 or 5, you know, really great mates, because oftentimes when you move away, you just, like, a lot of friendships, they're stronger when you're geographically located closer to each other, because that's just, you know, you can talk to them, you're in the same time zone, you go out together.
Right.
So you kind of build that. So I am one of those, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, you're lucky if you can count your best friends on one hand. I'm like, I'm really lucky then, you know, because I've got quite a few really great mates, and I have always kind of put a lot of energy into my relationships, because that's really important to me, actually.
Right. I mean, in my experience, when I moved here, I felt this sort of like bottleneck effect, where in my mind I had this virtual city worth of friends, and then when I moved, I felt like the filter got thinner and finer. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you know, you have these, like you said, you know, between 5 and 10. Like great close people that you still speak with on a really regular basis, however long distance, but still those people that stayed, that friendship has more longing and more depth and more meaning, because you're both on different sides of the world fighting to keep a connection.
And absolutely,
I think that means more, you know, than people who say, oh, you know, he moved away and, I haven't heard from him in a while or something, but not making the effort to step forward and call and say, like, hey, what's going on? How are you?
Yeah,
you know, I think taking those small steps forward with people, it means a lot. And it's like you said, you need that sort of human connection, and we all need to feel kind of wanted and cared for. And
absolutely, absolutely. So I know it can be hard in another city, but I just think, like, for us and being musicians is something, like, there is all of a sudden, anywhere you go, you do have this community.
Yeah.
And even if you are not at first close, really close to anyone, you've got a community. You go to an open, like, all my gigs when I moved to different cities, I started off just going to open mic nights or going to, like, popular music venues and chatting to the musicians and chatting to the bar staff and, like, you know, making friends that way, like, because there is this community there, which, so it's never been a struggle, you know, to meet people. I think being a musician, it really definitely makes it easier.
Absolutely. Now I would like to step a bit more into something that I feel like if people are tuning in because they see your name on the link, they probably want to know about your experience with The Voice of Germany. That's something I'm really curious about too, because I've known you for a while now. We never really talked about it, like how you got on the show and what that experience was like, and you know, what that felt like.
So, The Voice of Germany, this is a great experience. Like, for me, it's definitely been exactly what I hoped it would be. I knew Patrick. It's kind of a long story. In 2000 and...
In 1991.
I think it was, I'm going to say it was 2014 or 15. I auditioned for The Voice. Actually it was Max's idea.
How do you audition for it? From home, like a video audition or?
No, it was here. I was over here. Like, it was 2014, you know, like I was over in Germany by that stage.
Oh, you just went to where they host auditions and.
That's right. Like, I just went along.
I wasn't sure how that process was.
Yeah, you can just go and you, like, you know, apply and do your thing and I went there with no intention of going on the show. What I wanted to do, because at this stage I just released an album and I was like, I want to get in front of the panel of, like, the Universal people, you know, the music label, which is, like, partnered with The Voice. And I was like, that's who I want to get in front of to sing a couple of songs. And I knew that if you did, like, 4 or 5 auditions, then eventually at the end of the day you get in front of this panel, you tell them a bit about yourself, and you play a couple of songs for them. And I was like, I want to play them a couple of original songs.
That's a good plan.
It was like, and also, like, in the end, because they also invited me then over to Berlin, because they were really trying to get me to go on the show then. So I passed, like, all the auditions there that day. I played my songs in front of them, gave them all one of these new CDs. You know, I was just trying to get, like, again, like, just get in front of the ears, like, of the major label,
yeah,
you know, that I knew was associated with the show. They, you know, I went to Berlin as well. At that stage, the contract was so shit. There was no way anyway that I would have ever signed it. But, you know, told him the truth. I was like, listen, I just actually wanted to get in front of you. And in some ways, like, it was like a bit of a risk because it was like, okay, well, that was wasting our time. But that's actually, but they were also like, but that's quite impressive, you know, like, so, I was, I guess, a little bit on the radar. Nothing happened from it, of course. And they really wanted me to go on the show. Same reason that they really wanted me this time, because it makes for good TV to have the, you know, the girl from Australia speaking German, trying to speak German anyway. And it's a good story, and they're always looking for that story because it is a TV show, you know, it's entertainment value. So I didn't do it. And then, you know, as the years kind of went on, and there was a time when I just sort of stopped pushing so much, you know, like all this gung-ho young me, like I was just so, come on, like, you know, I want to, and like I just actually got to the point where I wasn't really enjoying music anymore, and I was like, you need to stop for a while. I actually went home for a while and just stopped playing music. Like,
when was that? Just,
that was 2013.
You just got burned out and needed a break?
Yeah, I think it was just, it was only after, like, you know, couple of years, or 2013, maybe it was a bit after, sorry, I can't quite remember. Anyway, no, it was later. It was definitely later, sorry.
you had just been just grinding away so much, being like a nomad.
Grinding. I'd signed to Sony Publishing. It didn't really work out with them. I just felt like, you know, man, it's hard. Like, what, you know, what is it all for? It's just so much, like, you never make any money. You're working so hard. You were away from everybody. Like, and I just lost another relationship. Sounds like he died. He didn't, like, you know, he just dumped me. And I decided to go home for a little bit. It was not that long ago. It was maybe 3 years ago, something like 3 years ago. And I was like, you know what? I just need to remember why I love it and just play music without any expectation of it being successful or getting to the elusive next level, whatever that means. And it was kind of as soon as I did that, opportunities came up, like what happened with Winter Bear, and what happened, and then going on the show again, because I know the guitarist who plays in the band, the band that's on The Voice, Patrick Veland, his name is, and, you know, he kind of spoke to the producer, and then they wanted me to come on the show again, which was last year. And, like, so kind of these things, it was like when I took a step back and was like, I don't know if this is the right path with my music, is when I just was like, lead the way, universe. Like, you know, tell me where to go. Like, I'll just take whatever opportunity comes. Instead of push, I was just like, just sit back, write songs when you feel like writing songs, you know, play music because you love it. Like, you know, even I was just playing some local little shows, just cover gigs with mates, just jam sessions every week. And then, like, you know, there started to be a couple of opportunities that just came up with stuff. And I was like, okay, so it's still pushing me in this direction. But yeah, so one of those opportunities was The Voice, and going on it for the first time. And it was, the contract was much better this time around. I think they'd learned from, like, you know, just, I mean, because they actually scout musicians, you know. Funny story, it was a bit embarrassing for them, but, like, after The Voice this last year, which was the season that I was on, I got an email from one of the Voice scouters this year, the start of this year, saying, really love your stuff, Kobe. Just one of the many, many scouters who even knows, like, how many they have. Really love your stuff. Would love to chat to you about going on The Voice. I put it up on,
like,
my Instagram.
I was like, do you even watch everywhere. The Voice, man?
totally. Do you know what my response to him was? Sending him the YouTube link to my blind audition. He was super embarrassed, you know, obviously sheepish. I was like, I don't want to make, like, I took out his, you know, like, I took out his name, but, like, all the production team from The Voice saw that, like, you know, that I had posted that, because I was like, man, this is too good not to share, like, I don't care.
And they actually
called me apologizing and, like,
really,
you know, so sorry. Yeah, because I think that, like, you know, he was a bit sheepish, like, he contacted someone who was on the show, like, literally just gone, you know.
Oh man.
So I think he definitely felt a little bit sheepish, but that anyway, Voice was a great thing for me. I'm really happy I went on it. It was a bit of a tough call, because at that time I had an album ready. and mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to release it. That was part of the contract.
Oh, man. Okay.
So that was June 2018. I had it ready to go for a summer release and just an independent release, but not allowed to release that. Had to remove most of my original music from online in the GSA.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the contract also, like, I wasn't allowed to play gigs after the finale for a certain amount of time because I was a finalist too. And somehow that's competing against the guy who won and the gigs that they're organizing for him. So, in fact,
okay.
I didn't really make, like, the, you know, because of the filming schedule and then the live schedule, I actually spent, like, you know, quite a few months not really earning money. You know, with, because with the filming schedule, you always had to be free. It changed a couple of times. I had to cancel a couple of shows, like, back last summer when we were filming. But I kind of was like, you know what, Kobe, you've only got a, maybe a little bit of coin, like money to lose, like really, like, so take your stuff offline and see if it goes the way you hope it will, which gets you a bit of a name for yourself because we as independent artists cannot buy that kind of promotion.
No, that's really, you know, the exposure, like, is insane.
Like, there's about, well, it was about 4 million people watching the blind audition. Basically, the blind audition is the most important thing because that's got all the emotion wrapped into the story. Yeah. And, like, less than half watch the finale, in fact. They don't know how to keep the viewers that long because it loses its, you know, those blind auditions, they really, like, you know, they had my family out there, showed me, like, coming in at the airport.
And you,
like,
had every judge turning around. Even you had this, like, hesitation from Mark Forster, who was like, is he going to do it? Is he going to be stubborn? You know, you get this, you get this excitement, and every time that a judge turns around, you get this crowd who's just more and more enthralled with, like, you and supporting this fresh face with this beautiful interpretation of this classic song. And it is really exciting. So, I can see how it might be hard to keep attention after you have this, the being the blind thing. That's the whole show.
It's the whole show. Everyone watches it for that. Like, I mean, I've fallen many times into the deep hole of YouTube videos of, like, the auditions of these shows, whatever it is, like X Factor or Idol, or, you know, and the story and, like, why they should be there. And I'm like, yes, come on, I want you to, you know, and then you don't know anything about what happens to them after.
And you're sitting there fighting at home, like, I can't believe they didn't turn around. I would have turned around.
Yeah.
You know,
I know. So it's, for me, I thought of the show, and I think there was a lot of, like, it was a bit of a shame. I think that even the show, the production company were like, guys, this is not the thing that's going to propel you to stardom or something. Use this as a tool. It's great promotion.
Yeah.
You know, take this and use it. But a lot of those young kids that are on there, you know, if I was young, I probably would have been the same. Like, I was the same, you know, you're so hopeful. You think, like, oh, this is it. Like, this is a big deal. In fact, it's such a great promotion tool, but really only if you are already, like, a working musician, you know?
Right, right.
I think it's, like, looking now, it seems to have worked the most or the best for people who, you know, are able to straight away get up and entertain an audience for an hour or two, you know? Right. And a lot of the contestants that were, I mean, man, there were some amazing voices and everyone can sing. But if you can only get up and sing one or two songs to a cover track, like to a backing track, like, you're not, you know, if you don't know how to play an instrument.
Yeah.
And it's something I've always said, especially to young musicians who ask, like, it's cool that you can sing. Like, so many people can sing.
Yeah.
You need to write your own music. You need to be able to entertain at the bare minimum, like, just like uploading covers to YouTube. Hey, I mean, I know it works, like, for whatever it might be, like 1 in 20 million of people or something. But it's still, like, I don't know, it's just not, you know.
It's not as marketable as, I mean.
It's not.
In today's industry, it's not just having one particular skill. It's building a whole brand, you know. It's like this
and
type
do
of
it
song.
Yourself. And
exactly, doing it yourself and having this personality and you're selling, like, you're selling your kind of ideology and your spirit to the audience. You hope that they buy into, like, you and not just that nice voice.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I didn't know, like, how would that go, because it is a cover song competition. It's kind of this, you know, big karaoke competition with the most with the most incredible band backing you, like the best musicians you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're not able to do your original music on the show. So I was like, is this going to translate? Like, because I had to remove all of my original stuff from online, not all of it, not quite all of it, but like, you know, I was like, are people going to then be interested in coming to my shows after this?
Right.
And yeah, it did. So I didn't know if it would translate or not, but actually it's been great for me this year. So I did a tour in May with a big booking agency now, from which, you know, was a result of going on The Voice. Right. And I did a tour with, look, it was just small venues, like 200 capacity, mm-hmm. but, you know, 3 out of 4 of those were sold out. And, you know, I was able to obviously catch, as the Germans say, catch some fans.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you played it the best way that you could.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, totally. It is a strategy, and I think it was the right choice to do it after the show.
Like yeah, that. For sure. And being able to, and we, the amount of inquiries that we got for like also corporates, also galas, you know, also private kind of functions, all of this sort of stuff, all because I went on The Voice, has been great. It's been amazing, in fact, like, you know, yeah. So it's just not so much of that hard slog, and a bit more time to, like, for me to be creative, because now I have the booking agency and I have Max, who's my agent, basically.
Max the man.
Like all these other things.
Well, speaking of, you know, talking about people needing to write their own songs and you know, kind of building their own brand and image, I wanted to ask you a bit about your songwriting method. I mean, if you're starting your own, let's say you're starting a new album and you have a couple of ideas, maybe some melodies or some lyric ideas. I don't know if you hum some melodies into your iPhone and you think about them later, or do you always start with the guitar, or how does it work for you?
Actually, it's, I guess I would say that the main way that it works is I start with the guitar, and then I kind of start humming a melody, and I've usually got there's usually a reason why I've picked up the guitar. So, like, you know, something that I need to get out. But for me, it's not often that I like have a lyric before I have the music. It can also go that way as well. Like I've found, like, I'm inspired by something I've read, or yeah. a word that I've seen, or a phrase that I've heard. Mm-hmm. And then I've sat down with the guitar. So it can go that way. Lately, in the last few years, I've also done quite a bit of, co-writing, which I've loved.
Oh, okay.
That was something I didn't do before. I was signed to Sony, and they organize a lot of co-writes for me. And before that, I'd just written by myself all the time. But I mean, on the new album, there's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 songs I wrote completely alone, and the rest were co-writes, either with the producer that I worked with or with other musicians. And I really love co-writes, because you just go in there and you just get creative and you bounce off of each other. And
I love that.
You kind
yeah.
of end up having like a bit of a therapy session with each other, like whoever's writing the lyrics to it anyway, because you're getting something out.
Yeah.
But most of the time, my creativity comes, it always can only come from things I've experienced, you know, like in my own life. And so usually it's about just these ideas of wondering what it's all for, what it all means, what mm-hmm. it's all for, how crazy life is, love, you know, that's like this recurring theme of loneliness for musicians, especially like I'm not in a band too, so I'm on the road alone a lot.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I play with other musicians, but again, that's a money factor. Like, you know, if
of course.
You've got the money to pay other musicians to play with you, then
yeah.
that's cool. But because I'm not part of a band, I guess I don't have that camaraderie, or, you know, we're not in it together. Like I'm in it by myself, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's, for me, that's how the songs come. And I really lately have also enjoyed, yeah, co-writing a lot as well.
Well, speaking of co-writing too, I wanted to ask about Winter Bear. I mean, this song, you know, I know a little bit about it, but I'll let you do the explaining. I would like to know, you know, where that idea came from, and if you, you know, where the inspiration came, the story behind the song, and, you know, if you expected it to go so viral. I mean, it was extremely popular when you dropped it.
So Winter Bear, I sang at a wedding, which I've been singing at weddings to supplement my income
sure.
you know, to,
yeah.
for my original music for years since I began playing.
Yeah.
I know a lot of artists who like kind of turn their nose up at that sort of thing. And I'm like, you're an idiot.
I think that's bullshit. There's so much money.
$10 an hour down like waiting tables, or you can make like a few hundred or thousand.
Or even more. Yeah. Like weddings pay such like private events, weddings, birthdays. Like it's, if you're in a downtime for touring, like it's so dumb to pass that stuff up.
Absolutely. And I also personally love singing at weddings. Because of like, you know, my music and my style, I'm always only singing at the ceremony or like shortly after. So I'm never around when everyone's getting pissed. Drunk. Pissed is the Australian word for drunk. I'm never around then. So I always am singing these people down the aisle where they're so happy. And this particular wedding, the bride was 6 months pregnant and this family was just so full of joy. Like it was palpable. Like you could feel the love, you know, around this couple. And the person who'd asked me to sing and got me there was the father of the groom, so the grandpa of the unborn child. And he was a huge music lover and he had heard my song in a movie. It was a title track for a movie in Holland because these people were Dutch. And he'd heard my song and he'd asked me if he could use the song for like their wedding invitation, their online wedding invitation. I was like, yeah, you don't even need to ask, you know.
Oh, that's so nice.
So nice. And then he was like, maybe there's a chance you can play. And like, you know, obviously then he organized that. So 3 months after the wedding, he contacted me and told me that the child was stillborn at full term. Horrible. And so he wanted, as a lover of music, what he wanted to do was write a song to remember his grandson by and also to give to his son and new daughter-in-law. Just because, you know, what do you say? What do you do in this like unspeakable, like, you know, moment of grief? And so anyway, he asked me, could you help me? Because he's, you know, never written a song in his life. And I said, of course, I can do that. So over the next few months, he basically sent me pages and pages of thoughts and some poetry and some pictures and some, like, you know, letting me know how the family is. And I also drew from, unfortunately, like, you know, I have a friend who lost her child to SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. I know multiple friends who've had miscarriages.
Yeah.
I had another friend who had already experienced a stillbirth, you know, and it wasn't until later that I realized how common it was. But I kind of drew from this and also specifically, like, you know, the stuff that he had written me. And I wrote this song, Winter Bear. And the song, it's so interesting because he didn't want to be credited as a songwriter, Grandpa. He doesn't even like to be named. So, but the first three lines, which for me are the most hard hitting anyway, the first three lines of the song, he wrote. I took it directly from his poetry. The rest of the song I interpreted and I made up, and, you know, so this was an interesting co-writer as such, you know, because he wasn't a musician, but.
Right. But the emotion was there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, what you need to write a great song. So we recorded the song and he gave it to his son and daughter-in-law. They listened to it every day and they contacted me and told me that it somehow does bring them like some peace, some glimmer of hope, you know. And I was just like, wow, this is, you know, pretty overwhelming. I sang it for the family when I was next in Europe, or like in the area, sorry, in the Netherlands. I sang it for them. That was definitely the hardest thing I've done.
Oh man, I don't know if I could have made it through that performance, you know, without crying or breaking down.
I actually just made it through. Broke down at the end. I'm like a bit teary talking about it.
It's for sure
quite an emotional.
Yeah.
So there came a point where we thought, hey, maybe it would be great to release this out into the public, because if this helped you guys, like, you know, how many other parents have gone through something like this? And it could be, in a way, like, I don't know, it sounds weird to kind of say the words healing, like how much, you know, like, I don't know, like about my own song, but that is the word that keeps coming up from the thousands of parents who have now written to me. So we did release the song and it had, within a few weeks, 4 million views, 50,000 shares and thousands. I couldn't respond to everyone, you know, thousands of messages.
It's amazing that this song reached so many people. I think it touches the hearts of a lot of people and is really, it's a really honest, like pain-filled, emotional song. I think it's easy for people to connect to that sort of thing. I think everyone has a story that they can kind of replace the truth behind it with their own pain, if that makes
sense. Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. And I mean, the song was called Winter Bear because that was their nickname for their unborn child. But so many people have still said like that was, you know, something that they can relate to anyway. But yeah, I still get messages from people. And it was recently, October the 15th was International Pregnancy and Infant Loss Day. I've reposted the video.
Right.
And like straight away again, like these comments and the messages that I get. And so I'm so proud to have written a song as a songwriter. Like that's all you really want, isn't it? Like that's how music affected me, was just like, wow, this is so powerful, this music, this language that we all speak, like that can help me through the hardest times, that can change my mood, that can lift me up, that can make me happy, that can connect us, you know, as humans. And so proud that a song, like, because what is success to me? Like that is, you know, like having touched so many people, but also like kind of strange that it's with such a sad topic, you know? So,
you're right. That's absolutely the main goal, and the true feeling of success is when you get a message from someone who listened to a song, whether or not it was particularly emotional for you to write. In this case, it was. Yeah. But when you have someone writing you a piece of the lyrics, or even just saying the name of the song and saying like, "This meant so much to me," for whatever reason it did for them, it's so rewarding. It's like that. Like I'm so thankful that you connected with it. That's the whole point, you know.
That is right. You're 100% right. So yeah, that was a pretty extraordinary, you know, bunch of events that happened that even got me to that wedding, you know, that that allowed me to, like, because I always like kind of look back at things. I'm like, okay, well, my song was in a title track in a Dutch film because I was signed to Sony. They got it in there. And I didn't think that deal was that great. But in the end, if it wasn't for that deal that got me that movie that the grandpa heard, I never would have sung at that wedding. I never would have been the one to help them write this. You know what I mean? Like, it's I just look back and I'm just like, even if you think always in my life, even if I'm like feel shit or think that something is not worked out how I wanted it to work out, I'm like, Kobe, just wait. You know, you'll look back and be like, if that hadn't have happened that way, then this couldn't have been where you've ended up. And I just find that such a really amazing thing about life.
Absolutely. And I just want to remind people that if they want to see the clip, they can go to your Instagram, which is Kobe Grant Music.
Absolutely.
So you have a new album coming out with a pretty funny title, Small Tits, Big Dreams. Mm-hmm, and I wanted to know, you know, where I mean, I guess the title, it's like, from my standpoint, it's like, okay, maybe it's self-explanatory, but maybe there's a funnier or different meaning behind it. And then, you know, you're going to drop the album soon. You have a new tour. You're going to touch into 9 German cities. You know, what can we expect from the new songs? And is there like a theme or a concept, or what's going to be new here for this one?
So the album is released. It was released a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, sorry. It's already out. Sorry. Yeah.
Hey, no, that's fine. So
actually, you're the bad cop.
Dreams. I'm the bad cop. Oh, for man. I'm sorry, guys. My research, I failed. I fell through. Yeah, the album is out for 2 weeks and you have but your tour starts in January.
That's right. So the tour is later. So we've been doing radio promo and we're doing the tour a little bit later. So it's a bit unconventional. Like, I mean, I'm an independent artist, so there's not really anyone putting, you know, a whole plan together and whatnot. So
I'm going to edit this where it sounds like I knew that all along.
Amazing.
Just to give people listening a heads up, Kobe's voice might sound a little bit different from now on. We talked for so long that her headphones died, and now she's switched over to a different headset, but everything should still work out fine.
Is she still there?
Are you there? Oh, we've lost Kobe.
Oh, no. We wanted to talk about our album.
Oh, there she is. Wait, leave
Sorry.
It. There she is.
I can hear you perfectly. I don't know why you couldn't hear me just then.
Oh, funny. Yeah, I don't know. As soon as we hit record, it dipped out.
Okay, let's try again.
Oh, but now she's here. Okay, we can leave that.
We can leave that. Just move on,
buddy. Let's do it. All right. Yes. So, the album's been out for 2 weeks. You have a tour starting in January. And so what are the expectations? What's the style, the concept?
So these are a collection of songs that I have, back when I was saying I had an album ready last June, 9 of those 10 songs are on this album. And then I just recorded another 6 with the same musicians and the same studio. But because it was like a year, essentially I had to, you know, wasn't allowed to release that music because of the contract with The Voice.
Right.
I had written all these new songs and I decided they still really fit in with the songs that were previously recorded. So I just, you know, I haven't actually ever like, it's kind of a time and money thing, isn't it? Like I've not ever had the chance to like be in a studio for 3 months kind of writing and recording a full new album.
Right.
Because when it's not funded by a label, it's always like a little bit here and there. So I was conscious of like, okay, do these songs fit together? And they really do. Like I, you know, I got them remastered and I got a couple remixed and yeah, they were all kind of really relevant for the last few years of my life and the journey that I've sort of been on. So The album is called Small Tits, Big Dreams, and there's a few reasons I called it that. I don't, you know, I can, well, you know, I can call it whatever I want to, can't I?
Hell yeah.
I don't have a label. So it was quite funny when I was telling people that's what I want to call it. The idea, like, it's kind of an impersonal joke within my family about, I mean, it's the truth, like, I've got small tits and I've got big dreams. So, you know, that was kind of the thing about it there was kind of just showing my humor. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit unexpected, I suppose, because I was like, oh, I could just call it one of the songs, you know, on the album, or I could just like show. So people think that the people that are really fans of me that follow me on Instagram, they know that like I do have a bit of a personality, I suppose. Like, you know, if you just see me on stage or just saw my voice performance, looks really lovely and sweet and nice, and I am those things. But I'm also, you know, a little bit rude. And so I thought I'm just going to put that up there. The other reason and the main reason that I called the album what I did is because it is dedicated to a friend of mine who passed away in January.
Okay.
And she had breast cancer. And Tara Simmons is her name. She was also a musician, incredibly talented musician. And Tara, she had the same kind of humor. So when she found out, she fought for 18 months actually. And when she found out, she created a Facebook group for her friends and her family just to let them know everything that was going on. And mm-hmm. she called it Tittle Be All Right, which, I mean, you know, that's play great. On words. Like, I don't, because Australians call breasts tits, you know, so Tittle Be All Right instead of It'll Be All Right.
I like that.
And which was brilliant. And then she also, you know, I remember when she was telling me she had to get a mastectomy of her left breast. And once she got back on online dating, which, you know, because the cancer went and then came back and, you know, but anyway, there was a time when she was back out there dating. She was still working. She was really active and enjoying life till the last kind of few weeks. But anyway, she got online and she put in her profile that she's the one tit wonder on her dating profile. So, you know,
beautiful, man. That's really a good sense of humor.
Yeah, she did have a great sense of humor, and that's, you know, and I had the opportunity to see her in October. She died in January.
I'm so sorry for your loss. That's I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks. It's tough. I miss her all the time. It seems way too young for someone to go. It's the mm-hmm. first person actually on the other side lucky that I've lost. So, and, you know, I dedicated the album to her, and I know I didn't get the chance to tell her that was going to be the title of the album because I didn't know then, you know, and I just know that she would have found it hilarious. She just celebrated all my wins and she was always so happy for me, and I just wanted to kind of, I guess, honor her in that way too, because I know she would have loved that as well.
I think that's amazing. I think that's really amazing.
Yeah. So that's there's a song I wrote for her as well, also on the album. It's called For Tara. So she plays a bit of a role in this album and in my thoughts in general.
That's really great. I think it's really, it means a lot when you have this really specific message behind, you know, the idea for the title or idea for a certain song. And I'm glad that you can talk about it here, and you know, people can listen in and kind of get a better image of the whole, or a clearer picture of the whole thing.
For sure. And I think, like, because some people find it a bit offensive, or they don't like that I've called my album Small Tits, Big Dream. Like, some people find it funny and some people don't. That's the thing about humor. But, like, once they hear the story behind it, everybody can understand, you know, what my main motivation was for calling it that.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, who cares if they don't like the title? It's more about the content that you're putting out. And if they're a fan, then they're going to appreciate it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So just quickly, I want to let people know that, you know, starting in January, you're going to hit Hamburg, Stuttgart, Cologne, Vienna, Munich, Frankfurt, Nuremberg, Dresden, and Berlin.
Yes.
And I think that's really great. 2020 tour, 9 cities. Is there anything else you'd like to let people know about?
I'm doing those shows will feature some special guests. I'm actually going to be taking one of my musicians on the road with me, and he's an incredible musician. So it will be not just solo, which is cool.
Nice.
And some special guests in each city. So I think that's going to be really nice, like, for people to come to, something different from the last tour. And obviously singing all of the new songs from the album and the new songs that I've been creating since. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. You know, I don't really live with I don't have expectations anymore. And that's such a strange thing. Like, you know, my album's called Big Dreams. Of course I've got those dreams, but, like, after being so long in this industry, I sort of am like, anything will be great. Like, you know, I just don't want to, like, and I don't want to say that that's being lazy or somehow not dreaming, you know, because I will always have those big dreams. But I also am just, it's more about being totally grateful for however it continues to go. And so, you know, nothing will be disappointing, really. I'm always just really, you know, happy to be living off of my art, which so many people can't.
Exactly.
And at this point, I can live off, instead of having to have side jobs, I can just live off my art right now, which I'm just riding that wave, and who knows when it will end.
Well, I don't think it's ever going to end, because you've really blessed a lot of lucky people who've gotten to know you and to hear your music. And I just want to say from me and Mo, we really appreciate having you on the show. Thanks for taking the time with us. And I wish you all the best of luck on this new release and this next tour. And I think you still have a long, bright future ahead of you. And if people are listening, they should definitely go see you in one of the cities near them. Check out Kobe Grant Music on Instagram. And thank you so much, Kobe. You're such a pleasure to talk to. You're such a sweetheart. And I'm thankful that you shared these stories.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It was really a pleasure.
For me, it's always amazing to be the first one to listen to these podcasts live.
Nice. Yeah.
Amazing. And you're an artsy-fartsy immigrant now. You can label that maybe.
You have the official stamp now.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Cool. Well, all right. Well, then that's from me and from Mo and from Kobe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince, produziert von Moritz Bartscheider für M94.5.